Chapter 43. Subduing the Storms. When it looks like thunder and lightning, handle it. You can do this. When you have the first indication, forestall it. Mary Baker Eddy, 1907. The leader had risen, and on a few significant occasions, replaced her diamond cross with her crown of diamonds. She also continued her recent policy of making herself available, and on several occasions invited students to Pleasant View for a visit and instruction. Recent callers included the Hannahs, Bicknell Young, and Annie Knott. Early in July, she invited members of the Mother Church to visit her at Pleasant View on Independence Day. One morning, shortly after the July 4th visit, Mrs. Eddy opened the swinging door from the dining room to enter the kitchen, just as a housekeeper's assistant she had not seen before was coming out. The leader put her hand on the girl's arm as she said, "Good morning," and looked into her face very searchingly, as if reading her character. She kept her hand on her arm as she spoke to each one in the kitchen. Then Mrs. Eddy went into the library and called Laura Sargent to ask the name of the new assistant. She learned that Miss Minnie Adelaide Still had been there several weeks, but this was the first time they had seen one another. An amended bylaw in the July 6th Sentinel abolished the General Association of Teachers in the leader's gradual method of first making their meetings triennial. As Mrs. Eddy had risen, truth's voice was lifted higher throughout the world, and, quote, "the higher truth lifts her voice, the louder will error scream," end quote. All Christian Scientists need to learn how to meet these fearful appearing, shrill outbursts of evil. And for this purpose, the leader called many to Pleasant View and to Concord. One of those who came to help at this time was Victoria Sargent, Laura's sister. During the several weeks that Mrs. Sargent was working in Concord, she was also called to Pleasant View a number of times. On one of these occasions, she said to the leader, "My students recognize you to be God's witness and mouthpiece. They are convinced that God is guiding you in this work, which you are carrying on for the cause of Christian Science. They feel that you fulfill the prophecies of the scriptures, that you represent the God woman mentioned in the Apocalypse." Mrs. Eddy responded immediately, pointing her finger upward and saying, "That is from above." Victoria was often inspired from above, and she was also greatly appreciated by the mother in Israel. At one time when Victoria was at home in Wisconsin, Laura, who was in Concord with the leader, wrote to her sister, "I wish you could have heard the loving word that Mother said of you today. She told me to forget self and be self-sacrificing as you are. And then she said of you, quote, 'She is God's anointed child,' end quote. I knew these words would cheer your dear heart and give you strength to do whatever God requires." The students working in Concord, as well as those at Pleasant View, all felt that they were working for the leader. None knew that it was just the opposite, that she was working for all of them. She longed to take them farther, faster, but few were truly ready to devote their lives to Christ's cause. At the end of 1 year's service, almost all who came were still in the primary department in the leader's eyes, but they were very eager to return to their homes and their own interests. But while there, they were all learning a great deal. The malice hurled at Christian Science, Mrs. Eddy, and Pleasant View caused the leader to keep her mental workers working on every aspect of error as it presented itself. One day, early in July, it appeared as a cyclone. Clara McKee recorded later, "During this trial, it seemed that every phase of evil presented itself to be met and destroyed. One day, Mrs. Eddy called her students into her study and pointed to a very black cloud, shaped like a cornucopia, coming toward the house in direct line with her front study window. She asked each one to go to a window and face it, and to realize that there were no destructive elements in God's creation. Although appearing to whirl straight toward Pleasant View, a mile or so away, the cyclone changed its course and went around Concord into the mountains, doing very little damage." Shortly thereafter, Mrs. McKee, who was Mrs. Eddy's personal maid, reminded the leader that her year was nearly up, and she desired to return to her home and office. How the leader yearned for students who chose to stay with her and learn Christ's way, but she graciously let them return to the world. On Friday, July 12th, after the leader had taken her morning walk through the downstairs rooms, she asked Clara McKee to send Miss Still to her. The cook's name was Minnie Wygant, so Minnie Adelaide Still was called Adelaide. Mrs. Eddy asked Adelaide a few questions about Christian Science and her teacher, and then said, quote, "Did you see the storm last week?" End quote. The storm was so severe that it had seemed to Adelaide as if the house would be taken off its foundations, and she assured Mrs. Eddy that she had seen it. The leader said, quote, "You know it was divine love that saved us, don't you?" End quote. Quote, "Yes, Mrs. Eddy," end quote, answered Adelaide. Quote, "Will you be my maid?" End quote, was Mrs. Eddy's next question. Miss Still told her that she would very much like to, but she had never done work of that kind. Mrs. Eddy responded, quote, "I know, dear, but I will teach you. Now go back to your work and say nothing to anyone about it, and when I'm ready, I will send for you," end quote. Just as Adelaide was leaving, she added, quote, "I have been asking God to send me the right one, and I believe He has," end quote. Judge Chamberlain had appointed Honorable Edgar Aldrich as master to determine Mrs. Eddy's competence, and on July 5th, he appointed two co-masters to assist Judge Aldrich, one of whom was an expert alienist. Streeter filed an exception to this action on Mrs. Eddy's behalf on July 11th. The defense also took independent action on this issue by requesting an expert, critical report from an alienist of their choosing, Dr. Edward French, superintendent of the Massachusetts Hospital for the Insane at Medfield. The alienist examined Mrs. Eddy on July 10th, and in his report stated that, quote, "there was not the least evidence of mental weakness or incompetence," End quote. During the course of the examination, Dr. French asked Mrs. Eddy to write a letter in his presence. Part of what she wrote for him stated, "I rise at about 6 o'clock a.m., eat my breakfast at about 7 a.m., open my Bible and read whatever I open to with a mental invocation that the divine love give me grace, meekness, understanding, and wisdom for each hour of this day. I daily look into the rooms of my house to see that neatness and order are preserved, and afternoons I take my daily drive." Mrs. Emily B. Hewlin of Brooklyn, New York, had been called to Pleasant View on several occasions, and she was one of the mental workers there in the summer of 1907. One day, in Mrs. Hewlin's presence, Mrs. Eddy was looking rather depressed, and, as if thinking aloud, said, quote, "I don't know, perhaps they will have their way," end quote. Mrs. Hewlin responded, quote, "Mother, they will not. We love you. You will win," end quote. And she felt that the leader was cheered. Mrs. Eddy loved Pleasant View. At one time, when Henrietta Chamfrau was there, Mrs. Eddy had said to her, quote, "Henrietta, if I ever go away from here to another house, it will be to be delivered up to my enemies," end quote. Sybil Wilbur said that she was non-suited for the enemy, quote, "in this dream home, so simple and altogether lovely. The spacious and handsome home of Chestnut Hill was then devised and planned by others," end quote. In mid-July, although her household knew it not, Alfred Farlow and Archibald McClellan were seeking to find a suitable property for Mrs. Eddy near Boston. Mid-July was a very important time for Adelaide Still, for it was July 14th when Mrs. Eddy asked her to begin as her personal maid. Adelaide was younger in years and experience than the mental workers in the home, and though she was a practitioner, she had not been taught by the leader, as had most of her workers or watchers, as they were often called. Adelaide was not one of the metaphysical workers, but she was well aware of their function and described it as follows. The watcher's duties were to take turns in working impersonally for the home, day and night, for the protection of our leader and the house, and to handle specific questions and problems which might come up for the home or the cause. During the next friend suit, the watchers watched continually. But the lessons and instructions for the metaphysical workers were only a part of the daily routine. There were also lessons which included the other workers. Mrs. Eddy began her morning lessons by opening her Bible and Science and Health and reading aloud the message God gave her. On the morning of Monday, July 15th, she opened to Romans 14:22. Quote, "Hast thou faith? Have it to thyself before God. Happy is he that condemneth not himself in that thing which he alloweth," end quote. The leader said, as Miss Still recalled, "We should allow nothing which we cannot justify. He who sees sin and condemns it not will suffer for it." Can we work out a problem correctly if one figure is not in accord with the principle of mathematics? Can I enter the kingdom of heaven if I allow one sin? Will not that destroy the whole problem? one devoted disciple, endeavoring to follow the leader's teachings, wrote her on this same Monday. Your wonderful letter reached me. I rose into newness of life with the baptism which came from your loving words and watch care. I shall continue my earnest endeavor to follow and obey the, quote, Star of Concord, end quote, whom I have loved and followed so long. I find that I need more and more the mind of Christ to enable me to demonstrate over the higher and subtler claims of error. The law of love must be fulfilled in me if I am to continue to be a worthy disciple of my leader and teacher. Love alone will deliver from malice, hatred, and envy, which seem today to be aroused to destroy the Christian Science soldier. I am strong in faith that I shall endure unto the end of the belief of a power opposed to good. I sometimes feel that I am the least of all the flock, but I know in whom I believe, and I stand firmly clasping my Father's hand, trustingly awaiting divine guidance in hours which seem darkest. A rift in the cloud always reveals my faithful leader and teacher, beckoning me to come up higher. I shall not faint in the race, dearest. With unfailing faith in love and her chosen messenger, I am, as ever, your grateful, loving child, Augusta. This faithful student had also adopted the leader's practice and method of turning to God, for she said in her postscript, quote, "When I had finished my letter to you, I asked God to speak to me. I opened my Bible to 2 Thessalonians 3:3-5, and was comforted," end quote. Almost immediately, Mrs. Stetson received a rebuke, as did students in the household repeatedly, and on July 18th she wrote, "When I received your loving warning and rebuke to error, I was aroused, I was awakened. I should have been fortified and have escaped the snare. However, I am awake and will profit by the reproof and rise." The leader was always cheered when a student did not react to a rebuke, but profited from it. She wrote to her darling Augusta on July 20th, "Your dear letter assuring me of your compliance with the strict demand, quote, 'Come out from the world and be separate,' end quote, in the sense of science, comforts me. Oh, for a closer, clearer, nearer view of the divine science of being, that we all may be perfect even as our Father, the principle thereof, is perfect. This we must be in order to be Christian Scientists." She was ever endeavoring to turn her students to the spiritual here and now. She had said to her household workers the day before, quote, "Life understood spiritually is heaven here," end quote. If she could only waken them to this fact, they need not lose the guidance nor the presence of their mother in Israel. A few days later, in the Friday morning lesson, July 26th, Mrs. Eddy opened Science and Health, even as she did her Bible, and read to her students the message from God on pages 38, line 20, to 39, line 30. Jesus experienced few of the pleasures of the physical senses, but his sufferings were the fruits of other people's sins, not of his own. The eternal Christ, his spiritual selfhood, never suffered. Jesus mapped out the path for others. Meekly, our Master met the mockery of his unrecognized grandeur. The educated belief that soul is in the body causes mortals to regard death as a friend, as a stepping stone out of mortality into immortality and bliss. The Bible calls death an enemy, and Jesus overcame death and the grave instead of yielding to them. He was the way. To him, therefore, death was not the threshold over which he must pass into living glory. Quote, "Now," end quote, cried the apostle, quote, "is the accepted time," end quote. Now is the time for so-called material pain and material pleasures to pass away. To break this earthly spell, mortals must get the true idea and divine principle of all that really exists and governs the universe harmoniously. Every word she read applied to Christ Mary, as well as to Christ Jesus. While the leader was daily endeavoring to open her students' eyes and take them up higher, the serpent was ever at her heel. McClure's magazine article for July was largely a whitewash of Richard Kennedy, ridicule of Mrs. Eddy, and a recount of the Salem witchcraft trial instituted by Ahrens. Miss Milmine, however, bypassed Ahrens and called it, quote, "Mrs. Eddy's attempt to revive the witch horror," end quote. The August issue continued this false, quote, "history," end quote, of malicious gossip, while the Boston papers continued with hostile headlines, such as the one on July 30th, asking for the arrest of Mrs. Eddy's secretaries, Calvin Fry and H. Cornell Wilson. The editor of the Grand Rapids, Michigan, Evening Press, addressed a question to, quote, "this aged woman of worldwide renown," end quote, quote, "requesting the courtesy of a reply," end quote. His question was, quote, "what is nearest and dearest to your heart today?" end quote. Mrs. Eddy did give him the courtesy of a reply. Miscellany, page 271, stating in her brief response, quote, "what is nearest and dearest to my heart is an honest man or woman. Goodness is greatness," end quote. Senator Chandler's ability was exceptional. Had goodness been his motivation, he could have risen to greatness. But he was doing his utmost to have, quote, "this aged woman," end quote, Mrs. Eddy, dragged into court by physical force, although he did not want the Glovers in the courtroom to hear the other side of the story he had told them. Very possibly the young man from New York who visited the family every day that Miss Thompson was there was employed to keep the Glovers asleep and satisfied in lead. So Chandler was not happy when George Glover appeared with the letter his mother had written him on June 16th and the story of Eva Thompson's visit. But he had convinced Glover that he had his mother's interests at heart, and he exploited the episode with a good deal of elaboration. Large headlines in the Sunday Boston Herald announced, quote, "says Glover will drop case, persuaded by Miss Thompson of Boston," End quote. On Monday, the headline read, quote, Glover turns down offer of Mrs. Eddy through Ms. Thompson to drop suit, end quote. The stories went on to say that Eva Thompson of Boston was a close friend of Mrs. Eddy and had consulted with her and her attorney, Streeter, for several days. Of course, when Farlow was approached, he very naturally said that he knew no Eva Thompson and that she was not a close friend of Mrs. Eddy. In less than a week's time, the headlines stated, quote, Glover gets to home city full of fight, end quote. So the issue was dropped. But Chandler had become a father figure to George Glover and his daughter. He presented them with many gifts, especially jewelry and furs for Mary and her mother, and his letters in which he always spoke kindly of Christian Science and Mrs. Eddy were those of a family friend. George Glover passed away in 1915, unaware of the hostile things Chandler had written to others and said and done in his crusade against his mother and Christian Science. While George Glover and Chandler were discussing Eva Thompson, Sybil Wilbur was taking a very serious step forward. When Mrs. Eddy had answered the questions Miss Wilbur had first propounded in 1905, she also said, quote, If you require further teaching, my student Alfred Farlow is a good teacher, end quote. In the summer of 1907, while still researching Mrs. Eddy's history and writing a truthful chapter for Human Life each month, she also attended Alfred Farlow's Christian Science class. Mr. Farlow may have been interrupted in the middle of his class, for the attorneys for the plaintiff began taking the depositions of Christian Scientists on Thursday, August 1st. General Streeter, who was present for these sessions at the Parker House, wrote Mrs. Eddy on August 3rd. As you know, depositions were begun here on Thursday afternoon. Most of the day yesterday was taken up with the cross-examination of Mr. Farlow on the general subject of malicious animal magnetism. I think I ought to say to you that Mr. Farlow's statements on this subject were clear, sane, and convincing. Everyone present, including Mr. Elder, Mr. Morris, Mr. Eastman, and myself, felt that Mr. Farlow had added a splendid contribution to the literature on that subject. That Saturday, August 3rd, was very hot and humid in Concord. The sky was cloudy and overcast, and about 4:30 p.m., the day grew dark as the heavy clouds became very black. It looked as if they were going to have a severe thunderstorm. Adelaide Still went into Mrs. Eddy's study to see if she needed her. Mrs. Eddy sat in her chair, watching the clouds with a smile and a rapt expression on her face. It seemed to me that she saw beyond the storm and her present surroundings, and I do not think that she was conscious of my presence. In a few moments, the clouds broke and flecked, and the storm was dissolved into its native nothingness. This was the first time that Miss Still was a witness to Mrs. Eddy's subduing of a storm, and it made a vivid impression upon her. About half an hour later, she had occasion to go to Mrs. Eddy's room again, and the leader said to her, quote, Adelaide, did you see the sky? End quote. Quote, yes, Mrs. Eddy, end quote. Adelaide replied, quote, it never was, end quote, said the leader. Quote, God's face was never clouded." End quote.